Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we have a special episode for you today. The draft coming up on Thursday. You should be hearing this on Tuesday, probably. And we wanted to have Red Star selections for you. So joining me today is Brandon Croxton, a longtime friend of the show and a very good draft guy that I want to talk a little Red Star for. Now, Brandon, first of all, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Exciting time. Spring is here. And draft time is one of my favorite parts of the season. It's one of the things that marks we're getting closer to the start of the regular season and starting a training camp. So very excited.
I think of draft night as the football new year in a lot of ways. It's the start of everything. I don't really look at it as free agency as that, but the draft definitely a very exciting time of the year. I hope folks will join us for the draft stream. Brandon will be one of the analysts on it. So we'll have a number of panelists. We'll have a number of people watching the stream and kind of work collaboratively on a spreadsheet of potential next selections for the Ravens. It's done all in a very Ravens-centric manner. In particular, you might want to join us for day three this year when the Ravens have eight selections. So that's going to be very exciting. Should be a fast-paced day three. The picks come in very quickly, almost too quick to follow a lot of the times, but you get a sense of who's on the board for the Ravens and who comes off and their size when teams go. But it's a lot of fun. Brandon, you've been on before. Tell folks your experiences with it.
Oh yeah, it's a lot of fun. We talk a lot of football. We talk a lot about the players that we like and just kind of potential scenarios that come up in the draft. Like I remember a couple of years ago when the Ravens drafted Nate Wiggins, we were talking about, we were within about six or seven picks, and we were talking about and all really debating which of like three or four players that we really wanted them to pick at that time. I know you wanted them to take the offensive lineman that went to Dallas. I think Taylor Guyton. And it was also the corner that went to the Eagles. Cooper DeJean was, debated as well as Nate Wiggins. So it was a fun time. It's a fun time.
Lots of fun. And that is one of the fun things about it. I think this year it's going to be fantastic. I think we might get to about the eighth selection. We're going to know the Ravens for sure are going to be able to get one, or we'll have the option to get one of seven players, say. And I think we're going to be saying, wow, I'd take any one of these guys. Ravens have a broad set of needs, clearly. And whether you're a fan of Sadiq or either Fano or Vega or any of a couple of wide receivers, if there's a chance Carnell Tate slips, it's going to be an exciting day, exciting night watching players get taken off the board, trade manipulations that occur. You have a lot of trade analysis, by the way, that goes on during the draft in terms of who got relative value on selections. And that's something that's, I think, very fun. But anyway, I would encourage folks to join us if you can. The stream will be live. I'll have posts on Twitter about where to find it and whatnot. But it'll be on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube channel, multiple places where you'll be able to find it. And hope you'll join us for some of that. And by the way, when you're there, interact. Don't just sit back and lurk unless that's what you want to do. Interact and make your selections known to us, or your desires known to us for the next Ravens selection. Yeah, absolutely. All right, Brandon, great to have you here anyway. Looking forward to this show because the Red Star players are something that the Ravens have had in their scouting lexicon, I think, since the very beginning. And it may have been something that was added slightly after, but as long as I can remember, they've had it where scouts will name, it's either one or two players, I believe, per scout that embodies, being a Raven and they think or would make excellent players. Maybe they like them more than others. They usually reserve them for players who are A, within their region as on scouting typically, and B, that are later round guys, not a guy that would be, at the in the first round. We would not typically have a Red Star player. I'm not saying it's never happened, but that would not typically be the way. And I actually got to see the draft plaques arranged afterwards at a Ravens event. They have a event for suite holders that they my company had tickets to, and I was fortunate enough to get the seats 2 years in a row. In 2010, the Kansas City Chiefs, actually, their first four selections were all red star players for the Ravens. And they actually have a red star that's affixed to the plaque along with a number of other dots that mean various things about combinations of athletic testing or whether or not they played for 3 or 4 years as starters, or if they're a team captain, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
All right. So we've each got red star players here. We've each got 3 red star players we've selected, which is more than that we think the scouts get. But Brandon, start us off. Who's your first red star player?
Yeah, my first is Jennings Dunker. He is right tackle out of the University of Iowa. He's 6'5", 319, with 33 and 5-inch length arms. And he'll be 23 this year. He was 3-year starter at right tackle. He is more or less probably going to move to guard, but I think there's a possibility that he could either be a swing tackle or serve as a tackle in an emergency capacity. What I really love about him is he's got that fire and that grittiness that I think is just goes perfectly for this team. He is when it comes to run blocking, he is just a absolute road grader. He will drive a player to the ground, and then after he gets him to the ground, he will do an Eddie Guerrero 5-star frog splash on top of him, which as a defensive lineman you absolutely hate. So it's one of those things where it's injury on top of getting your feelings hurt when somebody flops on you like that. And he's just he's got that fire. He reminds me a lot of Ryan Jensen at the guard. He played tackle, but envisioning him as a guard, like I just see a lot of Ryan Jensen in him. He's that fighter, that guy that's gonna just be the enforcer on your offensive line. And what I really love about him is he's a good pass blocker. I think he's got adequate feet to be a right tackle, but I think he's got perfectly good feet to be a guard in the pass blocking. He has a good punch. He moves his feet well. His arms, sometimes he gets a little high with his punch, and that gets him in trouble, and that's kind of how he gives up practice here and there. But just a really good prospect that I think is just exactly what the Ravens need at the offensive line position.
All right, we'll talk about in just a second about where it might be appropriate to draft him, but I have a few things to say about it too. I love him, and I love the finishing is one among the best in this class. In terms of the interior guys, in particular, the guys who I project to the interior, thought that he plays nice and balanced, which is what you want from a tackle when he's setting up to mirror. But his mirror just isn't as good as a typical tackle level. So I think that's part of the reason he moves inside. It's not really a case of length. In his case, he's at 33.5 inches. That's adequate to play right tackle. But I don't think that's where he ends up. I thought one of the things I really liked is he's good at waiting for the imbalance to climb. And you've been a defensive tackle, so you know this. If you get double teamed at the line of scrimmage, one of the things that those two offensive linemen can do if they're really trying to make a combination block work properly is get you to the point of imbalance where the trailing guy, the guy who maintains that block, can finish you fairly easily. Just get you up on one pin, off both pins, get you out of that corkscrew or whatever you're trying to do to combat the double team, and set you up to be most likely just driven out of the play, washed out of the play. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
And hopefully not pancaked in your case, in Jennings' case, we hope there's a lot of pancakes that come from him if he ends up as a Raven. I didn't like his decision making going to level 2 a little bit, but that's something he could be coached up on. I don't think that's something that has to be wrong for the rest of his life. Some guys, they process so slowly that it might never work. And Daniel Falele, I mean, the Ravens really, I think they really tried to make him a better processor. It just wasn't working. And so I'm not sure it can be corrected in this case. I'd be very surprised if it couldn't be corrected in Dunker's case, that he could be taught to see the field a little differently and find his next, the next guy to block, line the next guy up properly. And most players do get a little bit better with that with age. I do have some question as to whether or not he's going to be able to be the backside of counterplay guys. Now he'd typically be leading a counterplay in either direction as a center. So it's usually a center tackle, center guard. Sorry, guard tackle or center tackle are the two combinations that will typically be a two-man pull that you'll see on a counterplay. I do have some questions as to whether he'd be able to do that. Certainly from the tackle spot, at the guard spot, you know, footwork is one of the questions I would have. The Iowa lineman, extremely well coached. That's actually a negative for him, is that there's such great system fits. You see them play within the scheme, and you see them do things they're great at because they are so well coached. And the other two guys, Bo Stevens and Logan Jones, I have much lower at their position group. They're both IOLs, but I have them much lower at the position group because I think the polish was a very significant concern for them as a percentage of their value. Dunker's good anyway, so I think he's going to be fine. Moving inside and being a high quality player. Now let's talk about where the Ravens draft him. Because I think he's probably too rich at number 45. Are you willing to go that high on him?
Yeah, no, I think good value for him would be at the third round. They have the 85th pick in the third round. 80th pick I think that's good value. If they get him if they were able to either trade back or somehow acquire a pick somewhere like around the 95 to a 105 range, I think that's excellent value for him. And if he falls all the way down to their fourth round pick, that's tremendous value for him. So
that would be wonderful. I think he addresses the Ravens' biggest need if he's available at number 80. The Ravens only have 11 offensive linemen right now under contract. So they need to get four more just to enter camp. And yeah, they probably can get two UDFAs if they need to, but they've already got a bunch of pretty marginal NFL talent on their top 11 with guys like Gwynn and Pinter, right? Pinter, the center.
Right. Yes.
I'm thinking if I'm saying it correctly or not. But you know, I think Dunker would be a fine choice. He certainly makes the team if he gets it. I think he also becomes the starting right guard probably right away, that he's a better prospect than Emory Jones. And Emory Jones also has less of the developmental upside at this point with only 3 years remaining.
Right. Yeah. I think he's an immediate competition with Emory Jones at right guard right from the beginning. And I think he has a very good chance to win it out either outright or certainly possibly by the bye week if Jones is struggling to begin the season.
All right, let me move on here with my first Red Star pick, and I'm going to stick with the offensive line here. I'm going with Brian Parker, former tackle of Duke, who I believe will be moving to center. And one of the nice things about this is Parker seems to have very much committed to the center position with snaps he took in the postseason and whatnot. So he's 6'5", 309, 32 7/8-inch arms. He's a little too short to play tackle with that. And he just turned 22 in January, which is quite young for an offensive line prospect. Most of those guys are 23 in 2026, and some of them are 24. What is there to say about him? 29 bench reps. He's a good rounded athlete with a 5'14 40. He had 10 flags and 2,335 college snaps, which is good for a tackle. So that's if that were true at center, that wouldn't be nearly as good. But he'll have less at center because he'll have fewer, plays where he's contested on the edge. In terms of pass blocking, fine results in the ACC. I think it's a function of processing, strikes, and mirror. It's not any one thing, but he got by with less than top length in that conference. The nice thing is he graduated in December with an econ degree, so graduated early. Economics degree. And he's a two-time all academic ACC. So he's a guy who takes over your line, and he's probably the smartest guy in the room right away would be my guess. Now, there are a lot of smart offensive linemen, but a guy like this who's coming in, I think he line leadership becomes very clear. You know, who's making the calls becomes very clear. Who you ask about something is more clear. In terms of run blocking, he can stalemate individual guys. Very few players really create one-on-one drive blocking these days in the NFL. It's a matter of how effective are you at with combination blocking. He's a guy with a very vertical build of a tackle, but without the length. So that does mean he won't have the ideal pear shape on the inside. Now, at center, you could maybe get away with a little bit of that. He's got to be a decent pass blocker. He's got to be a better pass blocker than Linderbaum was when he hits his prime for Parker to be a really exceptional pick for the Ravens. What else is there to say? There are questions about how much more weight he can put on his frame, but he should be big enough, I think, to play NFL center since he's carrying 309 currently. And most mocks have him going at about number 115. I think if the Ravens could get him at 114, he'd be of neutral value from a value perspective, let's say, but he'd be a plus need pick at that point, and I'd really be in favor of that if they could get him. They're one of the things, if you've got a bunch of players that are mocked at number 115 overall, the inefficiency of the draft is going to present the Ravens with better opportunities at number 115. It wouldn't be surprising if they have all of a sudden have six guys on their board who they really like a lot more than they do Parker at that point. But I'd still be very excited for the Ravens to get him, whether it's either in round four or round five.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think this guy's kind of an interesting athlete. I think he's definitely probably best suited to be a center or definitely inside. But he moves really well. And actually, you know, he had a 9-foot broad jump at the combine, which is pretty impressive for somebody who's over 300 pounds. So, I mean, that kind of shows his athleticism, his explosiveness. That'll hopefully allow him to be a pretty good puller. And he's got, you know, some, you know, 300 pounds, like he's got good weight to him. Hopefully he can, you know, put a little bit more on that frame and not avoid being kind of bull rushed and pushed into the quarterback at center.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. Let's go on to your second guy.
Yeah. My second guy is Jacob Rodriguez, and he is a linebacker out of the University of Texas Tech. He's 6'1", 235. He'll turn 24 during the season. One of the things I found interesting about him was he was a former high school quarterback in Texas and threw for over 3,000 yards one season, threw for 2,400 another, and, you know, he rushed for 1,000 yards. So he was quite an athlete at the quarterback position for them. You know, one of the things that, you know, a lot of times, you know, you'll see a team put their best athlete at quarterback and they don't really necessarily know what they're doing at quarterback. They may throw the ball 5 or 10 times in a game, but they're, you know, running an offense where it allows them not to be a passer. I mean, he's throwing for about 250 yards a game. So he's out there dropping back and making passes and reading defenses. And what I really liked about him as a prospect is he seems to be playing the linebacker position like a quarterback. And I think it's really helped him as in his pass defense and coverage is he moves around. He kind of understands what's going on behind him, what's going on around him, and he makes plays. Like the biggest thing that he does is he gets his hands on the football. He had, this past year, he had 7 forced fumbles, 6 pass defenses, and 4 interceptions. I mean,
incredible ball production.
That is absolutely true. Yeah, tremendous production on the ball. And it's not a fluke. The year before, he had 3 forced fumbles, 3 pass defenses and an interception. So he's all 3 years that he's been starting, he's been able to get his hands on the football and just make plays. And I think that's, you know, what I'm most impressed about him. And I think he's somebody that could easily step in right away and be the starter at the weak side linebacker. I wonder And I'm not sure if he would be a guy to move over to Mike, that could move over to Mike and be the one-for-one replacement for Roquan. But I do think it's potential that if the Ravens were to draft him, you move over Buchanan to the Mike linebacker, and then you have Buchanan and Rodriguez as your two linebackers. And, you know, you would probably be saying to buy to Roquan at that point. But I think he's just a really nice player. A guy that I think about is kind of that I think he could be is kind of Patrick Queen in his third year, when he really started to kind of turn it around and make more plays. And then Roquan came in and he was, you know, very effective in shooting gaps. And that's part of Rodriguez's game. He's very good at shooting gaps as well. I think, you know, when we started to see Queen turn it around, I think that's the type of player that I think Rodriguez could be for us.
Yeah, I would set the ceiling as a lot higher than who Patrick Queen is for Rodriguez. And I really like him as a prospect. There are a couple troubling things. One of them is general size. He's got very short arms, 30 7/8, 6'1", 231. He's a little small for an inside linebacker. But he does have a really good athletic profile. Other than that, he's one of the older guys at inside linebacker in the draft. He turns 24 in September. He's got a medical for a Lisfranc injury in 23 that caused him to miss 7 games. He's played through some other injuries since, nothing that's really caused him to miss time. Give up 8.2 yards per target this last year, which isn't particularly good. But it's really not with him about the yards per target he gives up or even the opposition passer rating. It's about how often he gets his hands on the football. One thing I did is I took a look at all of his individual interceptions to try and see how was he getting them. You know, was he picking up the trash and whatnot? Were there deflections at the line of scrimmage? Wasn't that. I mean, literally, he reads the quarterback and does an undercut on a lane for almost every single one of them. He's got great tipped ball skills as well, often tipping the ball to himself among these interceptions, but he knows how to keep a ball alive in the air, which will help him. You mentioned it, in terms of him having a background as a quarterback, and I think the implication was you were making was that the skills of reading the quarterback might be portable for him, and I do see some of that. Very interesting 5-year path to his current draftable status here. He played as a reserve at Virginia because they let him play quarterback, and then left there to go to Texas Tech, walked on with them, did not have a scholarship, and played inside linebacker and special teams. Then 2023 had the Lisfranc injury. He lost 7 games and he redshirted for the year, and he still won the Independence Bowl MVP somehow. So I don't know how you do that, but you know, obviously there's a way you can get credit. You can have your eligibility reinstated for that. In 2024, he was a first team All Big 12. And then 2025, he has a list of awards as long as your arm. He's first team All American. That means he's over Sonny Styles. Okay.
Right.
He was the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. He won the Nagurski Trophy, the Lombardi Award. He was a finalist for the Walter Camp Award and the Lott Impact Trophy. And I couldn't actually tell whether he won that award or he was a finalist for it. By the way, I saw the awards listed on one site. But he accumulated certainly one of the great seasons you'll ever see at the college level, with the significant caveat that he did at age 23, where he's more physically developed. And this show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com. And, obviously more polished as a defender than a lot of the players he's facing against. Lots of stuff I loved about him. Best field flipper, though, in all of college football with what he could do in terms of forced fumbles. He has a fair number of missed tackles, and if you know, his yards per target is a little bit high. All of it is in gambles and trying to flip the field. He comes in attempting to punch first, tackle second, and that's a great gamble for Jacob Rodriguez. It's the right choice to make, generally speaking, if you have a high rate of conversion. It's you want to take those risks. Kind of reminds me of all the BS discussion about people who didn't like Ed Reed would talk about, oh, he gambles too much. I think Preston got caught up in this garbage at one point, but there, you know, people would talk about how Ed Reed didn't gamble. When you gamble like Ed Reed or like Marcus Peters and you know what you're doing, you can give up a lot of additional yards per target. You can give up some big plays because those interceptions and the oftentimes the touchdowns which accrue from them are such a very big deal. And that's really Rodriguez's game. He flips the field and has the best change of possession skills in the class. So I liked him a lot. I think if he lasts to number 80, or if the Ravens trade up, he becomes a consideration. I wouldn't take him in round two. I've got my Red Star guy is going to be somebody that I like a lot more than him at the same position in round two. So
I think Rodriguez is a top 60 player in the draft. So taking him at 45, I think is adequate value. If they were to trade back, you know, to either the end of the second round or the early parts of the third round and get him there, I think that's excellent value for him.
All right. That's possible. You know, it's possible they could trade back and get him. If they got him at 80, I'd be thrilled anyway. Let's put it that way. I'm going to move on to my next player, who's Anthony Hill of Texas. And 6'2", 238, 451. Now, here's the big difference between him and Rodriguez is that Hill turned 21 in February. So he's 2.5 years younger than Rodriguez. That makes an enormous difference in terms of developmental upside. And Hill has a remarkable athletic profile, good jumps, blazing 40, a 158 10 yard, very solid measurements. So there's no questions of size in his case or of any of the athletic components. He did miss the final two games of the 2025 season with a broken hand. It's called a boxer's fracture. Oftentimes, I don't expect that to have any long-term impact on him. I think it'll heal. He'll be fine. He's among the youngest ILBs in the draft. His stops to missed tackle ratio, and a lot of people have heard the shows, and they've heard me talk about that ratio. For inside linebackers in particular, that is the equivalent of the pitcher's strikeouts to walk ratio. It's that important. You need to make plays that are defensive wins for your team because you're responsible for a lot of tackles always. You don't want to be making them a lot of yards off the line of scrimmage. So stops are the defensive wins, and then missed tackles, the other side of that, I don't think need a definition, but I use the PFF accounting for missed tackles. Anyway, last year he was 10.0-1. There's only one guy better in the whole draft. That's Sonny Styles at 30 stops and only 3 missed tackles. Prior to 2025, he was a 3.0-1 guy with a lot of missed tackles and kind of a problem with that. I look at that as a very nice thing that during his age 20 season, he was able to turn around an enormous tackling problem and make himself into one of the truly fine tacklers in all of college football. So he's had a 3-year trek at Texas so far. He's a freshman All-American in 23, a second team All-American at age 19. Now, Jacob Rodriguez was just a second-team All-American at age 23, but this was in 2024 that Hill was the second-team All-American at 19. And then in 2025, he was again second-team All-American and a finalist for the Butkus Award. So that's given to the top linebacker. Got all kinds of sideline to sidelines. We've got a couple more things. I'm sorry, and I'll turn it over to you. Sheds blocks effectively. He does not try and two gap larger men. That may be something they want to have in his bag of tricks, but he's generally sheds people very quickly with good length and good quickness. He's very hard to hit in level two. He's not picked on at the college level. You know, he had one target every 7.5 coverage snaps. There's a lot of guys who get picked on much more frequently at the inside linebacker, particularly because inside linebacker has the coverage responsibilities for running backs, which are, include a lot of the check down throws. So that wasn't a problem for him. Only gave up two plays over 25 yards and 100 career receptions allowed. The big one was a 75-yard play surrendered to Travion Henderson of Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl in 2024, after the 2024 season. Just an extremely well-set up play where he ends up being blocked by the right tackle. And Texas had vacated that area to try and rush the quarterback and didn't get it done. And Travion Henderson, you know, had about as easy a 75-yard score as you can have. And Hill was blocked on that play. Got a 40% close rate in his pass rushing for his college career. And that's sacks and quarterback hits divided by total pressures as accounted for by PFF. So that's a very high rate. I look for that. That's very important for the quicker pass rushers in particular and the guys who rush off ball. Outstanding second man skills. He's not Rodriguez, but he had 8 forced fumbles and 2 fumble recoveries to go with 3 interceptions in the last 2 seasons combined. That's among the very best, but it's just short of Jacob Rodriguez for sure. And then he's one of the really interesting players, because I think if they draft Hill in round 2, which is going to be their only shot at him, if they get a shot there, that it might mean that Roquan is traded at that point or later in the draft. It could be they even trade up, including Roquan in the deal, to get Anthony Hill and then, you know, move on from Roquan and have some cap savings for this year that would accrue. But also Hill would be the long-term Mike linebacker, I would assume, for the season, as opposed to the Will. I think they'd keep Buchanan in the Will spot if Hill was their second guy. So I think outstanding fit to solve problems long-term. And he's a non-sexy pick because he's an inside linebacker. He doesn't address the offensive line, the defensive line, a wide receiver. Oh, my, not, we're not getting a cornerback. You know, all of the positions that people think of as impacting the pass. But he's one of the guys I really love in this draft.
Right. Yeah, I really liked him as well. I mean, I have Rodriguez ranked just ahead of him, but Hill is a very good player. And I think you're exactly right. I think while I have questions about whether Rodriguez could move over to the mic, I have no doubts that Anthony Hill could absolutely move over to the mic and be your mic linebacker and literally be the one-for-one replacement for Roquan. I mean, he's a very good athlete, solid tackler, does all the things that you want out of a middle linebacker. The only thing that I like more about Rodriguez is the turnover factor. But, you know, you also have to consider the age. You know, Anthony Hill's only 21. Rodriguez is 24. You know, I think what's also in Rodriguez's favor is he's only played linebacker for a few years, as opposed to, you know, because he was a quarterback for, you know, so many years, and now he just converted to linebacker, as opposed to Hill, who's been kind of brought up all along playing linebacker. So it's two things that you weigh when you debating a player. But I think Anthony Hill would be an absolute. I'd be perfectly happy drafting him. I think he's a guy that you could get maybe at the end of the second round to early third round, but he's absolutely worth drafting there.
All right. Well, fair enough. I think mock drafts typically have him a little bit earlier than that, but that's okay. I just think there's some very interesting things that could happen in terms of what happens to Roquan Smith if the Ravens got Anthony Hill. And by the way, Jacob Rodriguez, if you've ever seen a picture of the guy, because you know, you're normally watching him playing with the helmet on and whatnot. He looks like Joseph Stalin. I swear he's got the big, you know, substrate mustache.
He's got that
mustache.
Big mustache. Yeah.
It's a little bit of a weird
We're recording this on WrestleMania. Today's WrestleMania, first night of WrestleMania, and the guy that I think of is Dominic Mysterio. My kids are into wrestling, and Dominic Mysterio, who's the son of Rey Mysterio, is an all-time Hall of Fame wrestler. And Dominique has a very similar mustache, and every time I look at him, I just think of he's Dominic Mysterio. So yeah.
All right. Now, is this your second pro wrestling reference of the show? Because you had one earlier.
Yes, I had one. I was a big one, and when I was a fan, and my kids have, and I, you know, since then I've haven't been, you know, watching or keeping up with it, but my kids have gotten into it, and it's brought back memories and have me feeling young again. So I love watching it with them. My son and I, we went to WrestleMania 40 a couple of years ago together.
Wow. Okay.
And we're getting ready to, you know, we're watching WrestleMania, you know, tonight and tomorrow. So it'll be it's fun. Yeah.
All right. Very cool. Not in a completely different vein, but certainly not in the same vein. We really liked watching Glow, the show that was on Netflix for a while.
Netflix,
I think it was on Netflix. Yeah, about women's pro wrestling. It's absolutely hilarious. They do a very good job with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Absolutely. So let's hear your third guy. Who is it?
Okay. Zachariah Branch. He is a wide receiver out of Georgia. He'll be 22. Well, he is 22. He just turned 22. 5'9", 177. So on the smaller side, but he's just an incredibly explosive athlete. Ran 4.35 in the 40. All the broad jump was over 10 feet. Just a really explosive athlete. I think he's a perfect guy to work in the slot. I think of Marvin Mims out with the Broncos when I see him. I think he could be an explosive guy out of the slot, not only making, those quick 7 to 10 yard passes, two-way goes and things, but I think he's somebody that can attack down the field, attack the seams, and get down the field as well with that speed and big play ability. And I just like him as an overall prospect. Reminds me a little bit of Zay Flowers, because he's got that jitterbug juke moves, and you know, can move and get up the field and make people miss, which I really like. And he's just a really nice athlete that I think would be a nice complement to what we have.
Yeah. And this is interesting, because when he started talking about players that he was similar to, Zay Flowers is the guy for me who duplicates exactly what he does at the best of his game. So Branch has pretty good receiving statistics, but I think it was dragged down a little bit by a 3.6 ADOTS. They were using him a lot around the line of scrimmage and trying to have him make yak plays, which is, of course, what the Ravens use Zay Flowers for as a rookie more than they probably should have. Now they've gotten Zay Flowers down the field, they realize what they have, and he's a much more potent weapon. And with Branch, the biggest asset he has on the field is exactly Flowers. It's virtually no need to sit in the chair to decelerate. So I know folks have heard me talk about this before, but I'm going to mention it again for any new listeners, is when a wide receiver gets to the top of the stem where he's going to sell something to that cornerback who's playing off coverage, then he has to, he basically has multiple things he can do. He can do multiple things to wiggle, but he has to usually fake some sort of a move, maybe fake deceleration, maybe actually decelerate and come back for the football. But typically, in the process of making a move at the top of the stem is where receivers give something away. And so sinking your hips in order to decelerate is already giving something away. One of the dangerous things about Zay Flowers is he just runs straight at the cornerback, and then he doesn't have to sink his hips at all to stick his foot in the ground and make a left turn that no one in the NFL currently can cover. And that's why Zay was open so much between level 2 and level 3, even playing from that Z position, but also from the slot when he did, in terms of making space over there. There's nobody like him. And I think Zachariah Branch could be that kind of player. I just wonder if the Ravens can really take another one, given the fact that he and Wester also have some overlapping gadgetry usage and also some skill as a return man. He was my number 10 guy. I love the guy. Oh my God. Is watching him play is just a lot of fun. He's got a play style that if they went all in on Flowers, they've got to come up with a name for this, you know, with two players who are very Flowers like they'd have to come up with a name for this receiving group that was, you know, Smurf-esque or something. That would be fun. But great player, and very reasonable red star pick. Third round pick, you think?
Yeah, I think third round's perfect value for him. If he starts to fall towards the end of the end of the third round, maybe you look to trade up to get him or something like that. But I think he's a real nice player. And, you know, part of my, love of him, I'll give away who I really want the Ravens to draft in the first round is Kenyon Sadiq. I think if they were to somehow manage to get Sadiq and Branch, I think that would just make great compliments to each other and give this team, two bona fide playmakers that are very different in their styles of play, but both bring something to the table, really.
Well, Sadiq definitely blurs the lines between 11 and 12 personnel because he almost never plays in line. He'll play more with the Ravens in line. But on the other hand, it's going to be very exciting if they can. The Ravens will keep him in line some. He'll be a tight end for the fifth-year option, which means he makes only about 55% as much as a receiver. And the same relationship will apply when he gets the franchise tag as well. So the impact of that is that you have a wide receiver. You can't really force them to hang around for their second contract. If they don't want to, they're going to move on and they're going to get paid, or you're going to really overpay them like the Bengals have done with both of their guys. And like the Ravens may end up doing with Flowers. They may have to really pay through the nose to get, say, Flowers. If they draft Branch, you've got an option, first of all, on Flowers. So that would be one thing. But if they draft Sadiq, you potentially have the option on really cheap receiving, and effectively you remake your offense to fit him and make him effective. I think Sadiq could be incredibly effective on extended plays from Lamar Jackson.
Yeah,
just absolutely. That's so exciting to think about. Same thing with Branch, by the way. Be a great extended play threat. I just don't know how many of them they need on the same team. But it'd be a good year for the Ravens to pick up receiving talent. And I'm fairly agnostic whether they go for a wide receiver or a tight end in this draft. And my last guy is actually a tight end that I want to talk about. And he's a guy that I think the Ravens will get in the later rounds. He blurs the lines between between tight end and fullback as opposed to tight end and wide receiver. And that's Riley Nowakowski of Indiana. 6'2", 250, ran a 4.66. So he's got kind of typical tight end speed. He is probably older, but I don't have an actual age on him. So he's probably 24, but I don't know for sure because he's been in college for 6 years. One in Indiana, five previously at Wisconsin. By the way, so, folks out there, I can advocate for an older player. It's just got to be a later round player. Okay.
So I'll just interrupt you. So Dane Brugler on the Beast has Nowakowski as about to turn 24, 23 and 8. So
24 in what month, please?
It doesn't have his date of birth, but he said at the time of the draft, he'll be 23.81. So,
okay. So he's 24, probably in July or something.
Yeah. He'll be over the summer.
All right. Let me put that into my notes here. So I have it. All right. Receiving metrics, he had 10.8 yards per target. Some of that is Mendoza effect, but most of it is his own tackle breaking. The guy is an unbelievable broken tackle waiting to happen as soon as he gets the football in his hands. 130 passer rating and throwing him the football, and a 0.31 missed tackles forced per reception in 2025. He does have extremely limited receiving history with 62 targets and 50 catches in 6 years, but he really blossomed in this final year. Played 67% in line. There's so much to say. He had a great 29-yard catch against Penn State in the final 70 seconds. It was really a key play that moved Indiana to 10-0 on their way to the national championship. So that certainly had an impact on it. He had four plays of 30-plus yards in his final college season, which that's a lot for any receiver. And even for a wide receiver and kind of a top wide receiver, that would be a very solid number. And that outstanding missed tackle force rate, I'm going to put that together with something that the Ravens coaching staff may really love, that because Eddie Faulkner from the Steelers, really known for having running backs who break tackles. You get them the ball in space, out towards the side. It passes as an extension of the running game, or a lot of where those missed tackles forced occur. And both Jaylen Warren, Najee Harris before him, and who's got Gainwell, all really good tackle breakers. And I think that's going to be something the Ravens try and get out of all their receivers and their running backs as well in the coming years. Even not been a particularly strong thing for Derrick Henry in 2025. He needs to be a better tackle breaker. I think Eddie Faulkner can probably help him with that. But anyway, the other thing is they're moving away from the fullback, they say, or they're de-emphasizing the fullback. If you want to only go halfway, Noah Kowski is your guy. He can move anywhere around. He'd line up in the backfield, line up in line, wherever you need him. He's big enough to do those jobs at 250 pounds, and arms are a little short, but he's big enough to basically play that Swiss Army knife role and do it very effectively. So I think he's a round five or round six player. I think the Ravens could get him reasonably cheap in this draft, but I absolutely love the guy, and I would love to see him be the second tight end they get in addition to, say, a Sadiq or a Trigg or somebody else that they might get earlier.
Yeah, he's a meat and potatoes type of guy. Like, I don't think you're going to get much receiving production out of him. You might get a little bit, but I do think, you know, this is a guy that you're probably looking that would probably be the replacement to Durham Smythe on the roster. Durham Smythe is pretty much like just your blocking fullback, not much of a receiving threat. Noah Kowski can be a little bit more of a receiving threat, but I think you're drafting him to be that blocker, that potential H-back hybrid type of player that's going to be kind of more of a blocking back to begin his career.
I want to hit on one thing you just said, because Durham Smythe has 142 career catches, which is not nothing. He accumulated a lot of them when he was playing Miami, you know, years ago and whatnot. But in his entire career, he's broken one tackle, is one missed tackle forced. Riley Nowakowski is a completely different player in terms of his value as a receiving threat and what he brings you after the catch with us. And it, you know, it shows up in the 10.8 yards per target this last year, but it really shows up in that missed tackle number. Smythe, I assume, will make the team because he played with Doyle last year, but the Ravens really kind of want two inline guys or two guys who can play inline. And I think it would make a lot of sense to have a guy like Nowakowski a little further down. But anyway, yeah. Glad you got a chance to enjoy him too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, Brandon, always a pleasure to talk football with you. And whenever we get the chance, I love it. We may be lucky enough to have you on for a portion of all three nights as a panelist. And we'll look forward to that and look forward to all of you joining us. Brandon, tell folks where else they can contact you if they have a question about football.
Sure. I'm on Twitter at bcroxton99. Love talking football. Very excited for the draft and looking for kind of the next chapter to begin with this, how we're going to draft and how we're going to look kind of in the fall. So very excited.
All right. Other folks out there, use hashtag film study mailbag. If you have questions during the off season, I'll try and get them to the appropriate show or answer them myself with a 1 to 3 minute video. If you've got a kind of a philosophical or a roster building question, might even invite you to be on the air as for a short, kind of like Brandon is doing right now, which would be a lot of fun as well. And I'm trying to meet more new people this off season to try and expand the kind of the roster of people that I can invite on for a pod of various sorts. Brandon, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.